Entrepreneurs, small business owners, professionals who seek excellence, bringing the business classroom to you. It's the Business Builder Show. Here's Marty Wolf.
We still got a long way to go. Yes, we all got a long way to go.
Thanks for stopping by. The show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals who seek excellence is ready to get going. Welcome to the Business Builder Show. I'm Marty Wolf, and along with my sidekick, Carrie Carney, and our producer, Tom Jenkins, we are here every week to offer tips to help you build your business and your career. We are talking about sales, sales management, leadership, and motivation today. Lee Sals is our guest, and our discussion with Lee will center around how to hire right so you will have higher profits. Lessons that are particularly valuable for executives who have the responsibility to drive revenue with and through a direct sales force. We will bookend, that is, segments 1 and 4 of the show will be spent discussing points from one of our favorites, Carrie, Daniel Pink's what's called the Flip Manifesto. You'll hear how we connect all this. Hopefully, this will all connect as we go through the show. But, Carrie, let's start talking about Daniel Pink's The Flip Manifesto. The subtitle of this whole piece is 16 Counterintuitive Ideas About Motivation, Innovation, and Leadership. I think a key word, Carrie, is counterintuitive.
That's exactly where I was going, because some of the observations Mr. Pink has really flip a business model upside down.
And you can find this going to Daniel Pink's website, which is danielpink.com. And again, look for the Flip Manifesto, because I think you're going to want to get this. We're not going to cover all the points today, Carrie. We won't have time. So we want to hit the key ones that will connect with Lee's interview about hiring right and higher profits. So,
and the great part about it is he backs it up with data. These are just not lofty thoughts by Dan Pink. He backs it up with hard data.
So let's start with the first one we want to talk about is in terms of the Flip Manifesto. Is it says, start doubting yourself. Now, okay, that's a good place to start. Start doubting yourself. And he talks about if you're a business owner, which most of our audience is, you might, if you're looking for advice, you may get all those textbooks out. You may go back to your MBA classes. You may actually hire a consultant. I would highly suggest you do that, by the way. I don't want to just that by just... That was a shameless plug. But keep on moving there. What he's saying here is that, well, let's think about in terms of business advice. He suggests Bob the Builder.
No, that's right. The kids show. Cartoon show. Yes,
the kids show. Yes. Now, I love this idea, and he talks about that Bob the Builder has a radically different approach from what you might expect, from what you might hear or what you might have learned. And I guess it comes down to the main thing, Carrie, is, you know, kind of where, you know, often we talk about we can achieve anything. I'm great. I'm terrific. That's what we normally hear. But when Bob the Builder first comes on, he asks the question, can we fix it?
Yeah, that, you know, most of us, and I know in my parenting skills, we try to tell our kids, think positive, look in the mirror, say, I can do this, I can do that, I'm good. And that affirmation, what the point you're driving home is, Bob the Builder starts any problem with asking the question, can we fix it? Mm-hmm. So there's a little doubt in that question. Mm-hmm. Can we accomplish it? Or aren't we going to accomplish it? So can we fix it is the key.
When you talk about, I can do this, he's calling it a declarative self. That's called declarative self-talk. When you're talking about, can we fix it, that's interrogative. You're asking a question about yourself. You're doubting yourself. You're thinking about it a little bit more. And so he has different studies. Carrie, you referred to the fact that Daniel Pink does nothing without, or says nothing without deep research. And so he talks about different experiments and how they kind of brought some validity to this. And what he came up with these different tests, if you will.
Done by major universities, University of Illinois and University of Southern Mississippi, in putting these trial groups together.
Right.
That they got a number of groups, three groups together, and they were going to take anagrams, just a series of letters,
right,
and then try to figure out words from those series of letters.
Right.
And the three control groups, one group said, "I will." The second group said, "Will I?" And the third group just said, "Will." They did not give it a declarative sensibility to it.
Since you're rolling, how did that work out?
The groups that said in question and had a little doubt, "Will I?" did twice as good as the other two controlled groups. That little shred of doubt made them work harder or gained more clarity.
Maybe part of this, taking a quote from here, it says, "Setting goals and striving to achieve them assumes, by definition, that there is a discrepancy between where you are and where you want to be. When you doubt, you probably achieved the right mindset. Asking questions forces you to define if you really want something." You're questioning yourself. Tom, a clarity check. Is this making sense?
Is that a question?
Yes, that's a question.
It very much is making sense,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, because I like this idea.
I'm now sitting here doubting myself in a lot of different aspects of my life.
Well, that's a good thing. Now you can move forward, you know?
And this self-talking is a great thing. It's how you frame the question.
Yes. Now, Bob the Builder asked that question, "How can we do that?" And then he answers, "Yes, we can. Yes, we can." So you get there. Here's another Daniel Pink-ism in terms of being somewhat contrarian, is pay people too much. And he talks about a study done with teachers, and a lot of people are talking about, you know, compensating teachers on a pay-per-performance system. Well, how did that work out?
Not good.
Not good. Noticeable
improvement by paying teachers for a compensation type program.
It just did not come together. And, you know, that goes against a lot of what our world talks about, you know, pay per performance. And they're saying in this case with students, it just didn't work. Actually, some of it went backwards. So the question is, and again, we're talking about pay people too much, is then, well, what's the answer? Well, there's some more studies in this report, and it says, if you pay more than what the market demands, you will get all that loyalty, you will get all that work, you'll get all that. Here's the bottom line. Pay people enough so that it takes compensation off the table.
They're not thinking about it. Money does matter.
Money does matter, but it's not the most important. It's not the only thing. Pay people fairly so that they feel fairly compensated, and then let them focus on the job at hand. So we set up Lee Salz's interview, going through a couple of points. And after Lee's interview, we're going to tie this all together in segment four. And where we're going to start in segment four is, buckle up when you hear this one, increase sales by eliminating commissions. Oh, boy. Okay, so you're listening to the Business Builder Show. We need to take a short break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Lee Salz.
Bringing the business classroom to you, it's the Business Builder Show with Marty Wolf. Presenting the thought leaders of today, it's the Business Builder Show with Marty Wolf.
Welcome back to the Business Builder Show. Our special guest today is Lee Salz. And Lee is the author of a book called Higher Right, Higher Profits. Now, Higher Right is H-I-R-E, Higher Right, Higher Profits, the Executive's Guide to Building a World-Class Sales Force, which is available in both print and Kindle. By the way, his book is the number one rated sales/sales management book on Kindle. Lee is a leading sales management strategist and expert in hiring and onboarding highly profitable sales forces. Through his sales management firm, Sales Architects, Lee has helped hundreds of companies experience explosive growth through the migration of their sales teams from people-based to process-based. And we're going to focus on that. So, Lee, welcome to the Business Builders Show.
Thanks so much for having me, Marty.
I'm thrilled. I'm an old sales guy, and we already talked about me being old, so let's get that out of the way. Let's use veteran or experience. So I'm really looking forward to spending some time with you. I love the book, Hire Right, Hire Profits. Let's go right to the beginning. Why did you think this book was needed?
Yeah, that is a great place to start. You know, so often I talk to executives that spend hours, days, weeks bringing consultants, planning the sales strategy for their company, but very little conversation about who's going to be executing that strategy, meaning the salespeople. And so you're not thinking about who you need to hire and how those people you hire are going to get up to speed to sell that strategy. And so I hear the strategy, and then several months later, I get another phone call that's, yeah, the strategy didn't work. Well, why didn't the strategy work? Well, the people couldn't do it. The people. You mean the existing sales team? Well, how do you know you had the right people to execute that strategy?
Right.
Oh, we didn't think about that.
Okay.
Tell me how you taught them to implement that strategy. Well, they're great salespeople. They should be able to do it. Oh, my goodness, Marty.
Yeah.
This is why I have a profession.
Yes, really. So that's the foundation of the book. There was just obviously a need, especially, and you focus on, you call it Executive's Guide to Building a World-Class Sales Force. So you're talking about the decision makers. And so, okay, that sets the stage. So with that being the case, if that didn't work out, they apparently are not looking at hiring salespeople as an investment. And you talk about that really clearly. Tell me more about thinking of the sales team as a revenue investment.
Yeah, and it's rare that companies look at it this way. So I'll use an example. Imagine this morning a sales manager woke up with this incredible idea to grow revenue for the company.
Mm-hmm.
And rushes into the CEO's office and presents the idea, and what do you think the CEO is going to say? Oh, no, go do it. No. Mm-hmm. He's going to hear, well, what's it going to cost? And he hears $25,000 to implement it.
Right.
$25,000, that's a lot of money.
Right.
And then he's going to be given a laundry list of things to do before that decision is ever made. And somewhere 6 months down the road, he'll get a yes or no from that CEO. But that same sales manager who wants to hire an inside salesperson with a base salary of $25,000, nobody pays any attention. Sure, bring them on. Bring on two. Bring on three. Who cares?
It's a budget item, Lee. Is that correct? It's kind of, they look at it as a budget item. Am I right? As opposed to you're contrasting that with the longer-term investment. I didn't mean to jump in, but that's the way they look at it, right?
Right. So, for example, if you had an idea to grow revenue, if you were going to put on or participate in a trade show that was going to cost $25,000, there'd be planning, there'd be strategy, there'd be scrutiny on whether or not first to even spend that money, right, to invest that money. And then a salesperson, the core function of a salesperson is what? To bring in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the idea. So why wouldn't you have that same level of scrutiny and care and protection and bringing that individual into the organization?
You would certainly think so. But
I
too, have been in positions like you have been, and in terms of being a VP of sales or a sales manager, and I've experienced exactly what you've talked about in the book. That exactly right. And what you're talking about now is that, yeah, it's a budget item, but, you know, what's the plan? Now, Lee, you have some great ideas here in terms of, you know, you call them performance factors. Are you okay talking about some of these things that you are talking about in terms of thinking or planning? Like one of the things you talk about when hiring, bringing on a salesperson is the role overview. Give me some of those thoughts. Is that okay?
Yeah, so when we talk about performance factors, what I'm a big proponent of is looking at a particular sales role and identifying all the factors that lead to success or failure in that particular position.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Every role in every company is unique. There are unique factors that lead to salespeople succeeding or failing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a couple of examples. So if you look at a sales manager's style, there are some some that manage much more closely. People like to call it micromanager. We'll say manage more closely.
Mm-hmm.
And some much more from a distance, where the salespeople just go to the manager when they need help. And it's not an argument of which is right and which is wrong. It just is. That's the sales manager style. So we've got to find salespeople that will thrive mm-hmm. in that particular environment.
Mm-hmm.
There are some companies where there's a lot of sales support. There's a proposal writer. There's administrative assistance. There's people to help book travel. And then there are others where it's all in the hands of the salesperson to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, let's really dig in and figure out what those factors are that lead to success or failure, and then identify the candidates that align with those performance factors. So what you do is you wind up with a performance factor portfolio, and then contrast candidates with those factors.
Boy, that makes so much sense. You know what I want to talk about briefly again in the same
yeah.
vein? You talked about title. What title do you offer the salesperson? I thought that was pretty insightful. Talk to me a little bit more. Is that really that important?
It's huge, and there often isn't a lot of thought to it, or at least a one-dimensional thought. Let's give a nice title to attract salespeople to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that you have there is titles aren't just inward-facing. They're externally facing.
Mm.
So when you say that we're going to call our salespeople vice presidents of sales, and we're going to have five of them throughout the country, when someone meets with one of your salespeople with this title, vice president of sales, there's a perception that they're dealing with an executive, which means high level of decision making,
mm-hmm.
and they come to find out that this is really an account executive in disguise, meaning it's a rank and file salesperson who doesn't have the authority to buy a pair of socks. So it becomes very frustrating for the client.
Mm.
You also run into another issue, and that's the salespeople. As soon as you give me that vice president title, I think I'm a vice president.
Right.
And I have this perception that I can do things and make certain decisions that I may or may not have the authority to do, but you gave me the vice president title, so it feels like I can.
Yes. Wow.
So you have to think through the message that the title is going to communicate. Make sure that the title is commensurate with the role and responsibilities.
It has to connect. Now, here's something else you mentioned. We've got about a minute left in this segment, so we got plenty of time. But you take what I think is a unique stance in the book, and you say there is no such thing as a great salesperson. Whoa, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Marty, I think you just lost all your listeners.
Yeah, everybody turned it off. Come on, help me out if they're still on. Help me out. There's no such thing as a great salesperson.
Where our conversation started, these executives that put together these wonderful sales strategies, and then they find that they fail. And when I ask them about the preparation for the salespeople, and they tell me that they have great salespeople and they don't need to do that, they start coming around to my argument that there's no such thing as a great salesperson. And for any of your listeners who disagree with me, let me ask you this. How many of these so-called great salespeople have you hired, but they failed in your company? Now, if you believe in great salespeople, then you must subscribe to one of the following, given that they failed. Either that salesperson arrived at your company and completely forgot how to sell,
right.
Or your company is the absolute worst company to sell for in the history of business.
Okay, well, hold that thought. We're going to continue that on because if they didn't turn off the radio, we're going to continue that. So we are talking with Lee Saltz, and he is the author of Hire Right, Hire Profits. We'll be right back on the Business Builder Show.
Bringing the business classroom to you. It's the Business Builder Show with Marty Wolf. Informing, educating, and encouraging. The Business Builder Show with Marty Wolf.
Welcome back to the Business Builder Show. We are speaking with Lee Saltz, and Lee has a company called Sales Architects. But Lee, before I forget, what's the best way for people to reach you, especially sales executives?
Yeah, Yeah, if they go on the website, salesarchitects.com, they'll find a wealth of information, as well as information about higher right, higher profits.
When we left, we were talking about that there is no such thing as a great salesperson, and we're talking about that a little bit. Now I want to get into or connect that to the idea of hiring salespeople from the competition. I've got all kinds of stories, but I'm the host. You're the guest. Talk to me about your position on hiring salespeople from the competition.
Well, that solves all the problems, doesn't it? Hire people from the salespeople, and you kick back and get instant revenue. You know, you hire them. There's no training and development needed, no onboarding, and they bring over millions of dollars of revenue on their very first day. Isn't that the way it works?
Oh, it works every time. Oh,
every time.
Oh, right. So, come on. Give me the truth there, man.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Like you, I know you've experienced this, many of your listeners, we all want to believe that. Maybe not as extreme as the example I gave, but, you know, they always think that the best place to recruit talent is from the competition. And you know what the number one reason is for that? Laziness. You don't want to train and develop these people. Just have them come over, hand them a list, and go sell.
That's a great insight.
You know? Yeah. And I'll tell you a story. I mean, I'm not without blame here. Several years ago, I was an executive in the technology training industry, and this was back during the dot-com boom. This is when Microsoft decided to go after the server market, and they were setting its sights on Novell. And I've never seen anything like it. I mean, our business was just going gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
We were always looking to hire salespeople. And then this one day, I get a call from a salesperson who was actually representing himself plus several others from a competitor that had been struggling. Mm-hmm. They wanted to join our company. And I swear, it's like a cartoon. I bet if you would have looked in my eyes, all you would have seen was dollar signs.
Right. You were taking the bait, Lee.
Oh, my goodness. I sprint down to the GM's office, tell him about this phone call. He's pulling out blueprints for expansion. We're reforecasting. Now, we haven't even met these people yet. We're reforecasting.
Yeah. You're
so
all fired up.
We bring them in for an interview. Now, an interview infers that we're actually listening to what they're saying. We didn't hear a darn thing. We had already written the offer letters.
Right, right.
And those of you laughing at me, you know you've all done the same thing.
Yes.
Right? So, hired them all. I rolled the story ahead 3 months. All of them were gone.
In 3 months?
In 3 months.
Wow. Why?
And it was our fault.
Why did that happen? Tell me why.
Okay. Well, very easy to see when you look back. We referred to this company as a competitor. But our companies were so different, and the salespeople we needed versus what they needed was so different that had we taken a moment of pause and looked at these folks, we would have seen it. First of all, that competitor was selling to companies. We were selling to consumers.
Oh, big.
They sold by phone. We were bringing people in for face-to-face consultations.
Wow.
They were the low-price provider. We were selling comprehensive certificate programs at boutique pricing. Total mismatch.
These are big differences, Lee.
Yeah, I know. I should be fired.
You're still embarrassed about that. I'm surprised you're sharing that. You know, you're a courageous man. You know,
Thank you. We've all done it, though.
We've done some variation of that. You know, and then, you know, what I was thinking about while you were talking, you're absolutely right. You know, you have different people doing different things in different environments, different leadership, management, et cetera. But, you know, let's get back to some of the fundamentals. Like, for instance, you know, the old hunter versus farmer kind of thought process. And I've seen that repeatedly. They just hire a quote-unquote salesperson, right? But they do different things, right?
They do. And gosh, that hunter-farmer expression is awful.
I know.
Because the farmer role has been evolved such that we take salespeople who can't sell and we're going to quote-unquote make them a farmer.
That's right.
I guarantee you, you line up 10 salespeople and say, we're going to call you a farmer. How do you feel about that? And you're going to get smacked by all of them.
Right.
You might as well call them a four-letter word because of how that's been used.
Yes.
But it's such an important role. I mean, this is someone who's tasked with taking strategic accounts and growing them.
Yes.
And it is a very different personality type. The performance factors that you would look at are going to be very different than the folks tasked with acquiring new clients, the hunters, if you will. But gosh, it's just so important for business, and we step on ourselves calling it hunter-farmer.
Yes. But regardless, there's different roles in different companies doing different things in different ways, and the executives have to understand that while they're looking for people, correct?
And they do.
And let me tie that to, you know, okay, so you're talking about hiring or bringing them on.
then the next step is, okay, so let's assume you've done that right. Now we've got to onboard them correctly, and I've seen that fail so much. Talk to me about your thoughts on onboarding, which are fantastic. Talk to me about that.
Well, thank you. So the first piece is there are many companies, even today, that don't even have any type of a development program, an onboarding program for their new salespeople. And that's founded in the perception that they're hiring great salespeople rather than those with the potential to be great.
Mm.
Right? We talked earlier about salespeople succeeding in one company, failing in another. How can the same person be a rock star one place and a dud someplace else if there's great salespeople? Person didn't change.
Mm-hmm.
It's the match to that role.
Mm-hmm.
So companies, when we talk about bringing salespeople in, that revenue investment, you decided to make an investment in an individual. How are you going to protect that investment? How are you going to get a high rate of return? And the answer is through effective onboarding.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of mistakes that I see with companies that do this. I mentioned one, which is not having any type of a program. And then there's some extremes. There's the fire hose onboarding, which is drowning someone in material for a week and then saying, hey, go sell the value. And then there's, of course, you're a great salesperson, go sell.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Those two extremes. What needs to happen is there needs to be a structured curriculum put in place that teaches the salespeople to take the skills that you loved so much in the interview process that you extended and offered to them and teach them how to quickly use those skills in a specific sales role for your company. That's what you should be doing with your onboarding.
Let's go back to the point that you made right at the very beginning. This is a revenue investment. So tying that together, all the things we've talked about, what are some of the good things you do this? For instance, you mentioned turnover reduction. Wow. If we could do that in sales forces, would that have a positive impact?
Yeah, there's some wonderful outcomes that you get if you do a good job on onboarding. You know, a lot of times I hear CEOs say, that's a luxury. We don't need to do that. And again, I come back to the revenue investment. So you don't want to protect this investment and get a high rate of return because that's what we're talking about. So you talk about reducing turnover. You know, one you don't think about is being able to have salespeople that sell at the desired price points.
Mm.
Right? You have this parade of salespeople coming into the office saying, I need a lower price, I need a lower price. Well, why can't they sell the value?
Mm.
Well, when did you teach them what that value is and how to strategically present that to prospects?
Yes.
Well, they're great salespeople. We don't need to teach that.
Wow.
We're back on the merry-go-round.
Back on the merry-go-round. Back up. There needs to be an investment in hiring right, and therefore you'll have higher profits. Read Lee's book, and that is the title, Hire Right, Higher Profits. Lee, we're down to a few seconds. Anything that we missed?
One last piece on the onboarding. It's not just curriculum. You need to also assess their proficiency during onboarding and at the end to make sure that in that interview process, you know, you're talking about salespeople, they know how to sell themselves. Onboarding is the second bite at the apple.
You got it.
So you want to have quizzes, exams, simulations to make sure that they can truly meet the expectations that you have for success once they're put into the field.
Lee Saltz, president and CEO of a company called Sales Architects, thank you so much for being part of the Business Builders Show.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Presenting the thought leaders of today, it's the Business Builders Show with Marty Wolf. Presenting the thought leaders of today, it's the Business Builders Show with Marty Wolf.
Welcome back to the Business Builders Show. Lee Saltz, great interview, great stuff. The thing I want to remind people before we move on to the final segment is to remind everybody, especially executives, that your sales team is an investment, not just a budget item. So take Lee's advice, and by the way, check him out, Lee Saltz, S-A-L-Z, S-A-L-Z, and his company is Sales Architects. Okay, let's get to back to Daniel Pink discussion. Hopefully this is all connecting, and Daniel Pink, what we're talking about is his Flip Manifesto, and you can find that at danielpink.com. And what we said at the end of the first segment is in terms of some counterintuitive ideas about motivation, innovation, and leadership. Point number three, increase sales by eliminating commissions.
Heresy, I say.
And he says, truth often begins as heresy.
he talks about some companies that was having challenges, where saying, well, and so they're struggling with their commission plan. And basically what they were saying is that they had this commission plan, and it seemed like that was an obstacle. They were talking about, and then what did they do? They made the commission plan even more complex. Even more confusing. Eventually, this particular company and this executive said that, well, they were fearful that commissions were doing more harm than good. Now, I'm going to try to withhold my personal bias on this until the end, if you will. But so what did he do? He had this intuition. This isn't working, he thought. And so he approached his sales team, and he asked them, he says, well, you know, how's this commission plan working out? How's this looking? And his answers, Kerry, were pretty interesting, because we've experienced this. And it's like, well, if you ask me that, I'll say, well, yeah, I kind of like that idea. You know, I could kind of get away from the commissions. But, you know, Kerry and Tom, they'll never do that. They'll never do that.
And then when they asked Kerry and Tom, they'd say, yeah, I think it's a pretty good idea, but Marty won't go for it.
No, Marty is money driven. How many times have I heard that? You know what? You cannot eliminate the commission plan because our salespeople are money driven. Withhold my opinions. So here's some more data. Again, we're going to remind people, Daniel Pink doesn't put anything out there unless it is strongly researched. And basically what he suggested is something that we talked about in the first segment, and Lee alluded to it, is paying people a healthy, flat salary, a fair salary, and then share profits at the end of the year.
Well, the point he's making is there's competition amongst sales teams. And it can be healthy, and it can be unhealthy. Why am I going to help Marty and take away from my time inventory when we're all looking for that next great lead? Mm-hmm. Why am I going to help him find the next great lead? I need the next great lead. Mm-hmm. So in principle, setting that competition up is an adversarial relationship within the business.
Yes. To that point, Kerry, here's what this executive said. Ending commissions sent a strong message to the staff. We're not just paying you for what you close in the next 5 minutes. We want you to be an agent for the customer rather than just a salesperson. Absolutely, the commission plan was an obstacle to success, and it turned out to be wildly successful.
Yes.
They turned their business around, and my opinion, my experience has been that commission plans, that I've never seen a commission plan work. That's my personal opinion. I've never seen one really work.
And think about the sales manager. Their job is really devoted to making heads or tails out of the commission plan, instead of helping train the salespeople, helping get more, as Lee Saul said, that return on investment.
Great
for
point.
Your salespeople, not this, as Dan Pink calls it, a medieval spirograph trying to decipher what the commission policy, sliding scale, it starts to melt, blah, 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 blah. Focus on the customers and you focus on the internal customers.
Correct. Great point. So another point of the 16, and we're not handling all 16 from Dan Pink, counterintuitive ideas, is keep a to-don't list. And he talks about Tom Peters and Jim Collins, and, you know, they wrote, Tom Peters wrote In Search of Excellence, and Jim Collins wrote Good to Great, and he said, you know what, these people, if you go into corporate America, you're going to see their books, you're going to see all kinds of lessons about these two gurus, and they are gurus, by the way, but what these two people say and what Dan Pink says, probably the most valuable lesson that they taught is, the secret to high performance for individuals is deciding what not to do.
Get rid of the clutter.
Steve Jobs talked about that all the time. You know, we became successful not for what we did, but for what we did not do. So this idea, if you're an executive or a salesperson, anybody, if you don't want to waste time, think about putting together a don't do list. Why is that? Why would you do that? Because your time is limited. If you want to accomplish something, you have to have a clear focus. Don't clutter with activity. Think about where you're going. So this idea of a stop doing list.
Addition,
I like this.
Through subtraction.
Yeah, exactly right. So I like this idea. And so, again, we like to say, well, okay, what are some examples of what you would stop doing? Dan Pink offers some ideas. These are his. He says, don't answer email during peak morning writing hours. Obviously, he's a writer. Don't accept meetings or conference calls initiated by others that you wouldn't have initiated yourself. If it's not valuable, don't do the call. Another point, don't drink coffee in the afternoon. Don't go to sleep after 11 p.m. He didn't drink the coffee because that set up his day. If he got to bed too late, I would make a couple other suggestions. Don't make a sales call without a clear objective. Another one I would add is no Candy Crush during the day. Don't do the internet surfing for some people hours. Don't do that. So create a don't do list. Counterintuitive. Another point from Dan Pink. Establish a department of why. And if you go to any business school, you read any business book, they talk about, and a journalist, anybody in our business, we talk about who, what, where, when, why, and how. Now, all these different things, these areas, like tell you what to do. Well, your sales manager is pretty much going to tell you what to do, right, Kerry?
Yes.
The sales manager may actually say how to do it, who to go after, very specific things. Your strategy is going to very specifically add to that. So, but who's in charge of why? What he's saying is nobody for the most part.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, if you can even muster up a modest amount of why,
mm-hmm.
it is so impactful. And that's across the whole company platform.
And he suggests, if you want to get that done, go to your team and say, what's the purpose of this organization? And basically ask, why are we doing what we're doing?
I love the example he gave about a call center.
Yes.
It was a call center for a large American university. And the people on the phones, he split them into two groups. Mm. The one group, they saw specific results of what the scholarships do. They help young adults get an education, a career. The other group was just making calls. The group that saw why they were doing it, the end result, knocked it out of the park.
They understood
the why.
The why, which is the purpose. So, obviously, we didn't get to the 16 counterintuitive ideas about motivation leadership from Dan Pink. And we need to wrap up. So, thank you again for being part of the show. Lee Sauls, thank you for being our guest. You want to check out Lee? Go to salesarchitects.com. Our guest next week will be a surprise. We have some guests in the queue, and we have some requests to do something, so we're figuring this all out, what we really want to do. But we promise you a great show, so come back, and we will provide some great tips to help you run your business and build your career. Want to learn more about what we talked about in any of our shows? Go to businessbuildersglobal.com. That's businessbuildersglobal.com. All our shows are archived there. We do our best on the Business Builder Show, so you can do your best. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
Bringing the business classroom to you, it's the Business Builder Show with Marty Wolff.